up your Bible to 2 Samuel. It's after 1 Samuel, in case you're looking for it. 2 Samuel chapter 6. The entire chapter 6 of 2 Samuel is dealing with the return of the ark. The ark is, David is seeking to bring the ark into Jerusalem. You know, newly conquered Jerusalem. He had just, you know, in the previous chapter, threw out the Jebusites and set up Jerusalem as his capital city. But just to make sure we're all on the same page, the ark we're speaking of here is not the boat. It's not Noah's ark. You know, I know that may sound easy, but just want to be sure. What the ark we're speaking of here is a wooden piece of furniture that the Lord instructed very precisely how He wanted to be built. It's about 4 foot long, give or take, about 2.5 foot high. It had 4 rings on each side, and the poles were to go through the rings, and that's how they was to carry the ark. It was to be carried. And this ark was placed in what is called the Holy of Holies. It's the most holy place in what was then the tabernacle, which again was carefully laid out on how it was to be built. The design of it was specific by God on how it was to be built. Well, the tabernacle, sometimes called the tent of meeting in maybe a few other terms, was located in Shiloh when we started the study of 1 Samuel. And the Israelites in Shiloh, or the priests in Shiloh, were wicked. You know, Eli had 2 wicked sons. And when they went to fight the Philistines, they grabbed this ark, took it out on the battlefield, sort of to a similar, what we would call a good luck charm. They was treating the ark of God as if it was a lucky rabbit's foot. Took it out on the battlefield, suffered a huge defeat. The ark was stolen, and it went into the possession of the Philistines. Well, the Philistines, everywhere the ark went, the Philistines were being plagued. So at the end, they finally just said, "Get this ark away from us. We don't want nothing to do with this ark." So they strap it to 2 cows, and sent on a new cart and send it on. And it ends up in a place called Kiriath Jearim, a man named Abinadab. It's in Abinadab's house. And it stays, if you do the math, it ends up staying there about 60 years. So that's where David goes to get the ark to bring it to Jerusalem. That's where he picked up chapter 6, verse 1 last week. But as they're bringing it there, there was an issue. And we're going to cover that here in just a minute. Well, I'm not going to cover it. I'm just going to rehearse it here in just a minute. But the ark represented the presence of God. And David, now King David, king over a united Israel, and he was desiring to bring that ark into Jerusalem. That was his goal. You know, we read in Psalms 132, David is recording this, swearing he would not rest until the Lord had a place in Israel. More specifically, Jerusalem. He wanted it in the center of his reign. He wanted the presence of God in the center of his reign. He wanted the presence of God in the center of his kingdom. So now you see why Acts 13 says, "I found in David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who would do all my will." Right? It's the complete opposite of Saul. Saul in 1 Chronicles is said that they did not seek the ark the entire reign of Saul. The whole time Saul was king, he never desired to bring the ark near him. Never sought the presence of God, for lack of better words. Now, the ark is about 10 miles from Jerusalem. Kiriath Jearim is about 10 miles from Jerusalem. Not too much of a task to go get the ark and bring it back to him. But interestingly, it's only about 10 miles from Gibeah. What's Gibeah? Right? Well, Gibeah was Saul's palace. Gibeah is where Saul's reign was, his kingdom was located. 10 miles from there, and he never saw it the whole time he was king. Only 10 miles from where his kingdom is located, and he doesn't care to bring it to him. But David does. David has a desire to go bring these presence of God near to him. And so as they're returning with the ark, they're celebrating, they're singing, they're dancing, until the ox stumbles and Uzzah reacts to brace the ark from falling, and he's struck down. And there's no question about it, the Lord is the one who struck him down. And it says in verse 9 of chapter 6, David was afraid of the Lord that day, and he said, "How can the ark come to me?" So David was afraid of the Lord that day, and it says in verse 10 that he took it aside to the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. So it's almost as if the next house, or the most nearby house, they took this ark and placed it in Obed-Edom's house, because he couldn't bring it. How am I going to bring the ark into the city of Jerusalem with me? He was so afraid of the Lord at that time. But he had a strong desire to bring the ark into Jerusalem, to have the presence of God near him. But still, as sincere as David was in his desire to bring the ark to Jerusalem, it does not give him the right or the authority to handle the things of God in a way contrary to the way God had arranged them to be handled. And it ended last week of Todd's study in verse 11. It said, "The ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite 3 months. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household." So, real quick, I want to touch on who this Obed-Edom is. It's going to be kind of hard to do. There's not a whole lot about him. But there are many people who try to make a claim that he was a pagan, a Philistine. And the reason they do this is simple. Obed-Edom the Gittite. A Gittite could refer to someone from Gath. Gath was a Philistine city. Gath or Philistine region. Can you name someone from Gath? Goliath. Goliath was from Gath. So does it seem likely that David, who desired so strongly to have the ark resting in Jerusalem, will then just dump it off in the home of a Philistine man? It doesn't seem likely at all, does it? So in Joshua 19, and we're not going to turn there, as they're fixing to enter the promised land, we have the land allotment. The land is being, you know, divvied out to the tribes. And when it gets to the land or the tribe allotment for Dan, it mentions a city named Gath-Rimmon. Remember, the Levites didn't get a land allotment. They were given 48 cities set aside in each of the other tribes' land. And this Gath-Rimmon was set aside for the Levites. And it was actually a Kohathite city. And the Kohathites were the one whose duty it was to care for the vessels and objects within the sanctuary. So most likely, this reference to Obed-Edom being a Gittite was meaning he was from Gath-Rimmon, not Gath of the Philistine Gath. Most likely. But however, the fear of the Lord has basically paralyzed David at this point from finishing the task that he set before him at the beginning of chapter 6. So they took the ark inside of this Obed-Edom's house. And this makes you wonder, you know, my mind just wonders how Obed-Edom felt about this. You know, how did he feel about having the ark in his house? You know, he had just heard how the ark, as it left Shiloh, how it caused all these plagues. You know, everywhere it went in the city or nations of Philistines, it caused all these plagues. And when it was coming on its way back, you know, Uzzah reached out to brace it and it struck him dead. And then they just drag it, whip it on into his house, right? How did he feel about it? Well, we have to assume he welcomed it. And we have to assume that he handled the things of God, you know, correctly. But just, I want to make sure we don't think that this is just an Old Testament teaching. The New Testament also teaches on the things of God needing to be done a certain way. You know, it actually says in Hebrews 10, it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. So the fear of God isn't just an Old Testament teaching. It's not like this is the God of the Old Testament. When we get to the God of the New Testament, it's a whole different God. Same God in the New Testament that we have in the Old Testament. We actually have a passage in Acts 5 of a man named Ananias and Sapphira. You know, and the Lord, they ended up lying to the Lord. They lied to the Holy Spirit, and the Lord struck them down. And when the Lord struck down this couple, it states in Acts 5 that fear fell upon all who heard these things. So everybody who heard about it was fearful, much like David. And no one dared to join them. They wanted to get away. Kind of like David. He wanted to run back to Jerusalem. You know, but if you look at this, many desire the presence of God. They just don't want His holiness. But you can't separate the two. Okay? So now, that was Todd's lesson. Now we're going to get on in verse 12. And it was told King David, the Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the ark of God. So David went up and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. So then it was told to King David. This is a verse that kind of hinges this whole thing. You know, if it wasn't for David hearing the news of the blessing of Obed-Edom, we can only speculate as to how long they would have left the ark in the house of Obed-Edom. But David heard that the house of Obed-Edom was being blessed. And the house of Obed was being blessed because of the ark. You see that plainly in verse 12. Because of the ark of God. So now David again is going to make plans to bring the ark into Jerusalem. And it's not as if David is trying to rob Obed-Edom of these blessings, because David had desired the whole time to bring him into Jerusalem. David is just realizing that God blesses obedience. That's what David's realizing here. Therefore, this time, David's going to handle it a different way. If you would, turn to 1 Chronicles 15. Should have had you there earlier. Apologize. First Chronicles 15, verses 1 and 2. David built houses for himself in the city of David. He prepared a place for the ark of God and pitched a tent for it. Then David said that no one but the Levites may carry the ark of God, for the Lord has chosen them to carry the ark of the Lord and to minister to them forever. So this time he's going to do it with the Levites carrying it, which is exactly what they were told to do. I think it's in Numbers. But then if we go on to 15:13, it says this. Because you did not carry it the first time, the Lord our God broke out against us because we did not seek Him according to the rule. So David knew exactly why the Lord broke out against them. Because they did not carry it the first time. No question. David was a quick learner. You know, David understood why his effort to bring the ark into Jerusalem was rejected. He understood that. And I say this a little bit with sarcasm. As David was contemplating, why would the Lord break out against us as I'm trying to bring the ark of God into Jerusalem? Why? You know, and I wonder if his mind raced, and I say this again with sarcasm, well, we were celebrating before the Lord. We had songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and castanets and cymbals. Maybe our worship was rejected because of music. That would have been a perfect time to address this. But look, God has not prohibited music in the Old Testament. And He's not prohibited music in the New Testament. You know, so I just thought this would be a perfect time for God to say, look, if you're going to do things the way I want them done, I don't want none of those cymbals, castanets, harps, I don't want none of that. But he doesn't even address that. It wasn't the music. It was simply the fact that they had strapped it onto a new cart set behind ox, and sent it on his way when he had told them to carry it the whole time. That's what the rings were there for. That's what the poles were there for. And David knew that. Now notice the fact that the Lord blessed the household of Obed-Edom. We read that in verse 12. And the ark was only in his possession for 3 months. So apparently these blessings were obvious. They were obvious to the onlooker. That 3 months into it, they could notice a difference in Obed-Edom. But interestingly, the ark was in the house of Abinadab some 60 years. And there's no mention of his house being blessed. Not one mention of his house being blessed. So it makes you wonder, is it possible to be near the presence of God and be completely unaffected? Is it possible to be in church where we believe God is in our midst and be completely unaffected? Maybe even to a point where we carelessly handle the things of God. I believe so. Let's read 13 through 15. And when those who bore the ark of God had gone 6 steps, he sacrificed an ox and a fattened animal, and David danced before the Lord with all his might, and David was wearing a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the horn. So it looks as if David made an offering at the beginning of this trip, after 6 steps. I think it was a one-time thing. Some people think it happened every 6 steps. I think it was one time. They went 6 steps. They offered an offering, and they did it to kind of maybe consecrate the removal. And they're going to offer another offering at the end of this thing as almost maybe a thank offering. And we're told why David sacrificed. If you left your finger in 1 Chronicles 15, I hope you did. We're told why he did this. Chapter 15, verse 26. So David and the elders of Israel and the commanders of thousands went to bring up the ark of the covenant of the Lord from the house of Obed-Edom with rejoicing. And because God helped the Levites who were carrying the ark of the covenant of the Lord, they sacrificed 7 bulls and 7 rams. They sacrificed because God helped the Levites. That's why they did it. And it also says that David was wearing a linen ephod. Now, I didn't really get into that as much as some commentators did, but that's pretty much what I was taking. He wasn't wearing his kingly garments. He wasn't dressed as if a king would normally be dressed. So just 3 months prior, they abandoned this noble quest to bring the ark to Jerusalem. And they left the ark in Obed-Edom's house and ran back to Jerusalem. Seemingly ran back to Jerusalem. So in this chapter, this short chapter here, we get a great picture of a God to be feared, which is what we see, and a God that we can run to, a God that many run from, and a God that we can run to. You know, you see a God that we can run from. You see that in Revelation 6. The kings of the earth and the great ones and the generals and the rich and the powerful and everyone, slave and free, hid themselves in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains. And they called to the mountains. Basically, they ran and hid in the mountains and called to the mountains to fall on us and hide us from the face of the Lamb. From the face of Him who is sitting on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come, and who can stand? So you see, there you have a picture of God, running from God. And we also get a picture of a God that we could run to. And you see David and him as they ran to this ark and they're embracing this presence of God and bringing it back into Jerusalem because they desire so much for it to be in the center of His reign, kingdom, and rule. We see the same thing with Peter. You know, when Peter, who had recently denied the Lord, when he hears Jesus on the shore, what's he do? Abandons everything. Jumps in the sea and swims. Running to Christ. You see it. And it has to be a balance. It's not an either or. You know, it's a healthy fear of God we have to have. We must maintain a healthy fear of God. We can't get so complacent and so comfortable that we just, you know, treat the things of God with distaste, you know, with neglect. You know, it's a balance we have to keep. Verse 16. And as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked out the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. Now, real quick, and I'll back up. This verse is injected into the middle of this account. Into the middle of the account of a joyous return of the ark. The writer here is pausing to let us know that everyone didn't approve. You know, if we were to read 14, 15, and then go right on to 17, it all flows. And David danced before the Lord with all his might. And David was wearing a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the horn. And they brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent. You see how all that flows. But right in the middle there, we have a parenthesis. Not everybody's happy. So although this seems like a joyous occasion, some will dissent. And she's called here Michal, the daughter of Saul. Notice she's referred to as the daughter of Saul three times. Verse 16, verse 20, and verse 23. She's called the daughter of Saul. Well, why is that? Well, we'll get to that in verse 20. Because in verse 20 is when she's going to verbalize everything that's in her heart. But it says she despised David in her heart. And we're going to see what those feelings were. They're going to come out in verse 20. But it said, noticing, it said that she looked out her window and saw. Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked out her window and saw King David, and then she despised him. Look, she was a spectator, not participant. No, she wasn't participating. You have all these female servants and all these people and the whole nation seemingly outside dancing, singing, shouting, and she's just looking on. She's an onlooker, a spectator. You know, these people rejoice in the fact that a symbol of God's blessing has come into their presence, and she looks upon them with contempt. Can we see this today? You know, of course we see it in sports, right? Who's the biggest critics of Alabama football? People watching it. You know, spectators. They're not the ones out there sweating, working hard, planning, striving, but yet we can critique with the best of them. You see the same thing in churches. Most church critics are spectators. Just like Michal. Don't be like Michal. Verse 17. And they brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. Now, I wish Tim was here. He could answer this for us. Because this is one of those places that I'm on, almost like if you go to school and the teacher writes a question up on the board, never tells you how to figure it out, never gives you the answer to it, that's what you're fixing to get. I don't understand all this. I'm just going to point out the facts, and I apologize up front if I may be wrong. But there's some things here I just can't quite pull together. But it said that they bring it in and they set it in a tent that David had pitched for it. So this tent David pitched for it right here is not the tabernacle. We see that in verse 7. We also see where it says, now the king lived in his house, talking about David, and the Lord had given him rest from all his surrounding enemies. The king said to Nathan the prophet, see now I dwell in a house of cedar, but the ark of God dwells in a tent. Now in my mind, that had always been the tabernacle. But it's not the tabernacle. It is a tent. The tabernacle is in Gibeon. And we get this if we read 1 Chronicles, again, chapter 16. So if you're there, we'll read 16. And you can see 16, 1, 2, and 3. I'll read them real quick, but just to show you, we're talking about the same event. And they brought the ark of God and set it inside in the tent that David had pitched for it. They offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before God. All right? But skip on, we have David having a song of thanks, and when you get to verse 37. So David left Asaph and his brothers before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord to minister regularly before the Ark as each day required. And also Obed-Edom and his 68 brothers, while Obed-Edom, the son of Jeduth and Hasah, were to be gatekeepers. So you see, he left Asaph and them to minister before the Ark that's in Jerusalem. Verse 39. He left Zadok, the priest, and his brothers, the priest, before the tabernacle of the Lord in the high place that was at Gibeon to offer burnt offerings of the Lord on the altar of burnt offerings. So we see there that the Ark of the Lord was in Jerusalem and the tabernacle was in Gibeon. And early in Solomon's reign, so this didn't just, it's not as if David got the Ark first, then he's going to bring the tabernacle right behind it. If you read 2 Chronicles, verses 1, this is, see, Solomon, the son of David, established himself in his kingdom. So this is during the reign of Solomon. David had passed away. Solomon is now king. And it said, Solomon spoke to all of Israel, the commanders of thousands and of hundreds, to the judges and to all the leaders of Israel, the heads of the fathers' houses. And Solomon and all the assembly with him went to the high place that was at Gibeon, for the tent of meeting was there, the tabernacle, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, had made in the wilderness, was there. But David had brought the ark of God from Kirjath-Jearim, that's what we're reading about now, to the place that David had prepared for he pitched the tent for it in Jerusalem. Y'all follow all that? The ark is in Jerusalem, under a tent David had pitched for it. But the tabernacle is still in Gibeon. And they're actually sacrificing and offering sacrifices, or worshiping God, I guess I should say, in Gibeon. They're actually worshiping God in Jerusalem. Surprise. Ask someone else. I don't know what it means. I don't know if it means anything. I don't know the answers. I'm just pointing out facts that really knocked me for a loop as I was reading through it. But the ark had not been in the tabernacle since 1 Samuel 4, when the wicked sons of Eli removed it and took it to battle as a good luck charm. That's the last time the ark was in the tabernacle. And it will not be placed back in the tabernacle, really ever. And even then, it's a temple. When they build the temple, that's when they put it in there. So you won't see the Ark of the Covenant. Once it left in Shiloh, it never really seems to go back into the tabernacle. The tabernacle stays in Gibeon, and you have the Ark over here in Jerusalem. It never goes back together. So the tabernacle, with all its furniture and utensils, remained separate for the ark for nearly 100 years. It's about 100 years from the time of 1 Samuel 4 till Solomon's reign, when Solomon gets a temple built. They're worshiping the ark in Jerusalem, and they were worshiping at the tabernacle in Gibeon. We see that. So let's get back to the task at hand. I'll finish this up. I'll read, where are we at? 18 through 23. And when David had finished offering the burnt offerings and the peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts and distributed among all the people, the whole multitude of Israel, both men and women, a cake of bread, a portion of meat, and a cake of raisins to each one. Then all the people departed, each to his house. And now we're fixing to see how Micah really felt. But David returned to bless his house. But Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, "How the king of Israel honored himself today, uncovering himself today before the eyes of his servants, female servants, as one of the vulgar fellows shamelessly uncovers himself." And David said to Michal, "It is before the Lord who chose me above your father and above all his house to appoint me as a prince over Israel, the people of the Lord. And I will celebrate before the Lord. I will make myself yet more contemptible than this. And I will be abased in your eyes, but by the female servants whom you have spoken, by them I shall be held in honor." And Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no children to the day of her death. So David returns to his household to bless it. And we see what Michael really thought. And you see the sarcasm here, right? Oh, how the king of Israel honored himself today. She didn't mean that in a good way. That was strictly sarcasm. David, you're not acting like a king. That's what she's saying. My father was king. I know what royalty looks like. I know how royalty acts. You see, that's why she's called the daughter of Saul all the way through this. She wanted to look the part of a king, not be the shepherd king that David's called to be. And she said, today, today, oh, how you've honored yourself today, uncovering himself today before the eyes of his female servants. She has these same qualities that her father had. Now, you can take this as saying he was dancing naked before the Lord if you want to. Most commentators actually think this means that he was wearing the linen ephod mentioned earlier. But he wasn't wearing his kingly garments. He was uncovered in that sense. You took off your kingly garments and laid them aside, and you dressed just like a shameless, vulgar fellow would dress. That's what most commentators tend to think. And she's saying, look, you've honored yourself. You know, you're the king. You should have been honored. You should have acted different. You should have dressed different. Instead, you dress like one of them, and you're dancing around and singing and rejoicing like one of those. Oh, how you've honored yourself, David. But I wonder, do we have these feelings sometimes? Are we sometimes more concerned about our image than we are about our praise? I would afraid to say so. Maybe that's the reason we don't sing real loud, because we can't sing well and we don't want others to know it. We're more concerned about our image than we are about our worship. That's what Michael's saying. But David was very clear. He was before the Lord. And we don't need to be like Michael. David is clear. He says this twice in verse 21. It was before the Lord I did this. And then he goes on, and I will celebrate before the Lord. I don't care what you think, Michael. And then he tells him, you know, it was before the Lord who chose me above your father. Look, it was before the Lord that I was celebrating. This is what David is saying. Not before the female servants. It was before the Lord who chose me. It's before him I have celebrated. You know, David basically humbles Michael's pride by pointing to the fact that her father was rejected. The Lord chose me. He tore the kingdom from your father and gave it to me. You know? You need to humble yourself, Michael. And he shows by the example of Saul how that pride looked in the sight of God. The way your father acted, Michael, what did God think about that? The way he dressed like a king and went about in his pompous nature. What did the Lord think about that? The Lord chose me. I was dancing before him. So if he cannot have honor from Saul's daughter here, he'll be content to be honored by the maidservants. And that's what he's saying. Look, the female servants of whom he's spoken, by them I shall be held in honor. Look, that's all that matters. You know, and so I wanted to, I guess, I wanted to just look at a few groups that we see listed here in chapter 6 and how you may relate to each one of these groups. First group, I guess, I thought of was the Philistines. You know, and how they treated the presence of God, you know, the ark which represents the presence of God. They wanted away from us. Get this away from us. You know, so the presence of God in your life, is it something you don't desire? That's the Philistine group. They didn't desire the presence of God. They didn't want it. You could also be like the Israelites, who treat the things of God as if they're some sort of good luck charm. A lucky rabbit's foot, like they did in 1 Samuel 4. The genie in the bottle concept that we talk about often. Or is he Lord of your life? We could be like Uzzah. You know, and Uzzah seems to have lost his sense of wonder. He lost his sense of awe over the things of God. They were just everyday things to him, right? They had forgotten, I couldn't think of a better way to word this, they had forgotten the godliness of God. You know, I wondered about it as we read and study our Bible from time to time. Do we ever step back, like we're told in Psalms 46? Be still and know that I am God. Sometimes just step back and know that I'm God. I will be exalted among the nations and I will be exalted in the earth. Are you like Abinadab? Although you're among God's presence, it doesn't affect you. You're completely unchanged by the presence of God. Are you like Michael, who spectates but doesn't participate, who critiques without involvement? Or like Obed-Edom, who brought the presence of God into his house, and he was blessed for doing so. And of course, I thought of David. And it makes me wonder, does the presence of God ever move us? It moved David. So, there's a lot in this chapter. I wish I could have got down to some, you know, the whole thing with the tabernacle and the ark. I apologize that Todd said he'll get it next week. Anything I can't quite square up, he'll fix next week for us. So, Lord willing, please stand. We'll get to chapter 7 next. Collins, would you?